Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. It is time for Joe Sheehan here on Joe Day. He joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Joe, these are interesting times for the Chicago Cubs, and just when they think they've got something fixed, something else tends to break. How should they go about this sort of home maintenance, as it were?
The thing that they need, probably more than anything else, is a power lefty out of the bullpen. I know a lot of people are focused on a bat. I'm not sure how you fit a bat in, but the thing that there is more of just about anything else right now on the market is relievers. I think if the Cubs want to go out and get two guys to bolster that bullpen. And remember, they thought they'd done that with Kimbrel, and I think they still lead certainly at least one lefty, maybe one other guy. You look at the underlying numbers. The ERA isn't bad. The FIP isn't bad. They're middle of the pack, and they're the only contenders with worse bullpens are the Braves and the Nationals. But when you actually start to look at what they do, the bullpen has the second worst strikeout rate in the league. It's got the highest walk rate in the league for what feels like the 16th or 17th straight year. This has been a problem for this bullpen, even when they were good. Their bullpen was walking a lot of guys. The Cubs have really never had that during this run, had that, Herrera, Davis, Holland type of back of the bullpen, or the Nasty Boys, or some of the pens the Yankees have put together. It's always felt like a patchwork thing, and some days it goes like it did last night in San Francisco.
You saying Clayton Richard and Trevor Cahill leading up to Hector Rondon at the end of 15? Was it a knockdown Quantrill Moda thing?
Hey, it got them four wins of the World Series anyway. But this has been an issue. And this gets back to, I feel like this is a motif that, guys, we keep coming back to. The Cubs' inability to generate these random pitchers. I don't mean random in the sense that, like, Aaron Bummer's come out of nowhere for the White Sox. But most teams have live arms in their system that if they wash out as starters, go to the bullpen and can provide some innings, can provide some strikeouts. And the biggest weakness of what's been a very strong front office since Theo and Jed got there has been development of pitching. They just haven't brought up these, kind of the failed starter who goes to the bullpen and gives you 60 good innings. You look at this bullpen and it's all imports. And, of course, you talk about the trademark, it's going to continue to be imports. And I don't see failure, because failure is not really the word I'm looking for here, but just where other teams have 150 innings of guys like that every year, the Cubs have had none for 4 years now.
It's interesting you put it that way, Joe, because you look at Tyler Chatwood. He is a failed starter that they signed to be a starter. Would you put like you said, you don't want to say necessarily it's their fault, but would you put the burden, the onus of not being able to make Tyler Chatwood into a better reliever on the Cubs, or would you, split that around?
I don't know. I mean, Tyler Chatwood is what he is. Even when he was good, he was somebody with a high walk rate. And again, he's somebody who, the ERA is serviceable this year, but you look at the underlying numbers and they're just not there. 36 strikeouts, 26 walks. Starter, reliever, there's no role in which I can use you with a strikeout to walk ratio like that. It'd be nice if the team could turn Tyler Chatwood into a guy who walks, 8% of the hitters he faced, and now all of a sudden you've got an effective two-inning reliever. But I don't think I want to put too much blame on the team for not turning that particular – well, I don't want to use that metaphor in the air, but we'll just leave it at that.
You mentioned Bummer on the White Sox. Colome is the other guy that everybody's looking at. It's obvious that the White Sox have to be in some kind of sell mode here, yet Colome's got another year on his deal, which means maybe they can exact a little bit higher price for him. They still got to move him, though, right? Doesn't that get you closer to winning a World Series?
Yeah, especially since I don't know that the 2020 White Sox are going to live or die based on whether they have Alex Colome or not in his 65 innings.
Right.
I will also say, too, it's a smarter industry than it used to be. You're not making deals off of baseball card stats. But you look at Colome, and it's an ERA of around 3 with 21 saves. You can sell that and maybe get people to not look at what is a really pedestrian strike, actually a below-average strikeout rate for a modern right-handed relief pitcher. When you're striking out, and I'm just doing the math in my head here, about 21, 22% of the batters you face, you're losing ground as a right-handed reliever. So I think if you're the White Sox, you want to leverage the ERA and the saves, get whatever B-minus prospect you can get. And if you've got to fill those 60 innings next year, you go ahead and do it in the market, or you do it with, you know, you make Dylan Covey a reliever, and all of a sudden he turns into next year's story or something.
Joe, let's just spitball here a little bit, but I've been kind of interested in what the White Sox could add potentially at this deadline. And if the Diamondbacks, I mean, granted, that NL West thing is all getting kind of juicy now, but if the Diamondbacks get themselves into a selling position, I'm wondering if the White Sox, granted they haven't shown a lot of precedent to do this, but you could take that entire Zach Greinke contract, because you're not paying anybody else. You've got a bunch of dudes that you've got to get back and healthy into the rotation this next season anyway. And if the prospect price is lower than it might be for other teams because you're willing to eat as much money on Greinke as possible, I'm interested by it. I wonder if you are.
You know, it's funny. As I got up this morning and I went and had a nice big breakfast, I kind of checked out of baseball for a couple of hours, and I didn't hear that the White Sox had been sold. They have a new owner now? That's great. Yes. And whoever the new owner is, I hope he goes ahead and does this. That's something Jerry Reinsdorf never would have done.
I know.
That's a great plan, Connor. I'm absolutely on board, and I'm excited for the future of the White Sox under their new owners.
I don't know if you saw the series of tweets that Matthew Trueblood sent out, and he started by noting that Strope being bad is just not – you don't need a high-leverage reliever to become untrustworthy in late July when you've already gone down and spent money on Craig Kimbrell because of the Zobrist money being available. But he said in his run, I'm paraphrasing here, he said think bigger. He said that you got to swallow hard and go for a big-name star that affects your depth in a way that it puts somebody, you know, on the back of the bench or gets somebody off the team completely. He said Syndergaard. He said Gallo. He said one of these other guys that becomes available. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think one of the issues is the Cubs are the type of team that it's hard to fit. Like, you hear names like Castellanos. And how much better does Nicholas Castellanos make the Chicago Cubs over a one-month, two-month period? With any of these guys, you're playing the lottery, right? Because any hitter can go nuts or be terrible over 2 months. And I think Matthew's idea is correct, where you say, hey, look, don't look for the half-win upgrade over 2 months or one-win upgrade. Go out and try to make the move that locks up the division and that really improves you in the postseason. And I really like that thinking. You know, Matthew does a lot of writing, not just at Prospectus, but in his own newsletter, Penning Bull. People should check that out.
Yeah, that's good.
And I like the way he thinks. That's really a great, aggressive idea. If you're the Cubs, you know, your top prospect is a second baseman. You can make the argument that because of what your window is, maybe you can go ahead and put Horner out there. Make the argument that because you have four starters locked up for next year, I don't think Hamill's assigned, I think everybody else is, you can put an Alzolay out there, knowing that you've got pretty much your rotation set up. I think the Cubs want to be aggressive. I've said I don't think they'll do that, which puts them at a deficit relative to teams with deeper farm systems. Like, the Dodgers can get anybody they want. The Padres can get anybody they want. The Rays can get anybody they want. Whether those teams will do that or not is another question. I think the Cubs could not battle those teams that came to a prospect face-off, but if they have a greater willingness to trade their top guys, I think it puts them in play for pitchers like that.
Do you, Joe, going back to what the Cubs actually do have on hand, I don't want to get too far ahead in the trade deadline yet. Do you see Pedro Strop's issues this year as being correctable? And when you go ahead and plan out the rest of the season, do you allow yourself at all to think about Brandon Morrow featuring in this Cubs bullpen?
Well, I forgot Brandon Morrow was existed.
Yeah, me too. I got to remind myself every morning.
It's been over a year now since he pitched, right?
Yep.
The thing about Morrow is he fits into that category of pitchers I love, which is unavailable or great. Brandon Morrow isn't likely to show up and post a 4.7 ERA and a 4.8 FIP. If he's healthy, if he's available, he's probably going to be very good. And I remember the Yankees just do this with Jeff Nelson. Jeff Nelson would be given like a 3-month vacation in the middle of every season, and he'd show up in September, have like 4 good outings, and be wiped out in October. And I think if you're the Cubs, you kind of look and say, hey, look, that could be our guy. Let him get as healthy as possible, and if we get five outings out of him at the end of the year, but he's available for the playoffs, that's a huge win. And yeah, I think you've got to hope for that, especially, like I say, this is a bullpen that doesn't strike guys out. The Rockies are the only bullpen in the National League that's less likely to get a strikeout out of its relievers. So Brandon Morrow would be a huge asset for them.
See, now you're doing it to me. See, now you see, I had put him in like a category, like you say, non-existent, where I didn't think about him. And but now you're allowing me to be tantalized by the possibility again, Joe. I don't want to do that.
I feel like I come on here and I beat up the Cubs. Let's have a little bit of hope.
Ha. Now, you wrote about Mike Trout, and it was interesting stuff. This is the concluding paragraph, and I'm going to use it as a jumping-off point, actually, because this is yet another time where I find that we spend time having to remind even avid sports fans about the presence of maybe the best baseball player ever currently at the peak of his powers right damn now. And you wrote, Mike Trout is great no matter what he hits over a given week or month or half. As a fan, though, this is you, I would like to see him have the kind of stretch that helps define him for a larger sports world that still doesn't seem to get how great he is. High floors are valuable, but it's breaking through the ceiling that gets people to look. What did you mean by that?
Trout's never had Christian Yelich's second half from last year. He's never had the kind of year that gets you, I mean, I don't want to say, I use SportsCenter, and you know what I mean by that. It's almost a metaphor at this point, but the kind of second half that leads SportsCenter. It's unlikely that Trout's going to be able to lead the Angels to a division title because they're chasing the Astros and they're 1,000 games back and they have no pitching. But just to have the kind of like 1,300 OPS second half, hit 380 with 1,000 slugging or whatever, that kind of gets everybody talking. He's just never had that. If you look at his career, he's had two halves of his 15 halves now that have been a 200 weighted runs created plus, basically hit really well. And you look at the guys on that list, and he's lost MVP awards to players on that list who've had that kind of attention-getting half. Mookie Betts is on there. Josh Donaldson is on there. And Trout just has the highest floor in baseball. He's never bad. He's never bad for more than like a couple of weeks at a time. But he's never kind of just had that peak where, the way Ted Williams had a 41, the way you look at, Babe Ruth, you go back that far. Guys have just had these otherworldly stretches, Barry Bonds. Pretty much all of the best halves in baseball are Williams, Ruth, and Bonds. And it would just be great to have Trout hit 380 with monster power and just show everybody this is what it looks like when the greatest player who ever lived goes ham for 2 months.
Joe, you mentioned you feel like you come on here and bash the Cubs a little bit. I have optimism about them. I think they're the best team in the NL Central. And I would rather be them than the Brewers at this point, with Brandon Woodruff going to miss 6 weeks or so with the oblique injury. If you're making decisions for Milwaukee, are you doing it? Are you adding at this point, given the injuries that you've had, just kind of assail all the arms in that pen and rotation?
They're another team. Remember, that bullpen was great last year. Uh-huh. We saw Jeremy Jeffress blow the game last night. It's now basically Josh Hader and the Haderettes. Corbin Burns falling apart has hurt them tremendously. Jeffress not repeating, losing Corey Knebel. I think they're another team that, go out, add a reliever or two. They could really use a starter. That guy's not there. I don't think they have what it takes. It's not a great system once you get past Eura. Do they have what it takes to get a Matthew Boyd or a Marcus Stroman? Those guys are not only effective now, but they're controllable, and that raises the price on them. I think it's a tough spot for a team that really you can't argue. The Brewers have gone absolutely all out the last couple of years. This isn't an unwillingness of ownership. This isn't the front office hugging its prospects. But things have just gone very wrong for them this year. And last year they were over their skis a bit. This year they're seeing kind of the other end of it. I think you make minor moves if you're them, but I don't think you have the bullets to make the major move. And to some extent, you got to play the cards you're dealt.
We're talking with Joe Sheehan on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. He of Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, the Joe Sheehan newsletter. Follow him on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. We've talked a lot about the book, The MVP Machine, about the way players are developed now. When you started talking before about comparing the Cubs to the Dodgers and Astros and these organizations that have so much more value in a prospect face-off or showdown, How aggressively do you think some teams now are reevaluating their entire system using the modern technology, using the Astros' idea of rethinking how you find value in pitchers to maybe determine the found money, to find guys like the Cubs have found Robel Garcia this year? Like, where is the inefficiency in one's own system, and how aggressive, how detailed is the process of figuring out where you may have misevaluated or underevaluated guys?
I think it's like where Moneyball was or statistical analysis was 10, 15 years ago, where there's a spread. But the spread is probably not as wide even. I think even the lesser teams at that, and let's put the Marlins in their own universe, but you know, it's whoever you want to say the 29th team is closer to the Dodgers than, say, the 29th team was to the A's, you know, when Moneyball came out, or where to the, it's a narrower focus. The game has collectively gotten smarter, so the curve has shifted. And I'm fascinated, and I want to kind of get to this week in the newsletter. Remember last year the Ryan Pressly trade? Ryan Pressly was a reliever for the Twins. He'd been good. He was having his best year. The Astros got him. This is actually, I believe this is a story in the MVP machine, basically said, we want you to do this, this, and this. And Ryan Pressly didn't give up a run for the next, like, 9 months. I'm curious to see who those organizations go for at this deadline. Who are the guys we're not looking at yet, but they are looking at, and they're going to trade for somebody, and we're going to go, really? And that guy's going to go out and have a 0.5 ERA.
Because they're going to tell that guy, stop throwing your sinker, only throw your curveball.
Right. We've looked at you, or they're going to sit him in front of an Edgertronic or a Rapsodo, and they're going to say, if you make this particular thing with your hand, you're going to make your slider this much more effective. That's the whole point of that book, is saying players are no longer fixed sets of talents. We can change players in ways that we didn't know we could 10 years ago. So, yeah, those are the organizations I want to watch. And I do think that those teams are at the forefront. But if you tell me it's the Twins this year, you know, remember, they brought in Wes Johnson. They started using these cameras. They started using a lot more technology. If the Twins go out and get a reliever, that's somebody I'm going to be looking at and saying, hey, what do they know about him? What do they think they can do about him? The Yankees, not sure they're in the market for a reliever, but the same thing. If the Yankees go out and get a pitcher, I want to keep an eye on that guy. There are organizations right now. It's like you sit down at the poker table, right? Maybe that's not even the best analogy. You're in a fantasy league, and there's one guy you don't want to trade with, because if he wants your player, he knows something you don't.
Speaking of the Astros, should we be making bigger news of the fact that they have three starters in their rotation right now, that they only have Verlander, Cole, and Miley, who have made over 20 starts this year? Brad Peacock has made 15, but he's on the injured list right now. They're essentially working a three-man rotation, are they not?
Yeah, but they clinched the division, what, April 14th or so?
Yeah, give or take.
That's part of the – they can – I mean, even last year, the A's caught them at one point and tied them. But I think they played the whole year saying, hey, let's be good on October 1st. And, you know, it worked out for them. Obviously, they lost in the LCS – or, excuse me, in the division series. But I think their play of, look, let's just get through the season. And remember, they've had a lot of things go wrong this year. McHugh blew up, and I still think McHugh can be a good starter. Brad Peacock pitched well, was pitching well. He got hurt. Forrest Whitley's lack of development has really hurt them. Yeah. Whitley was supposed to be in the rotation this year. I want to see the shoulder injury, and the command's not been there. He's had a real – remember, he lost a lot of last year to being popped for a drug test as well. So, you know, he's all of a sudden well off the track. J.B. Buskauskas is the next pitching prospect through this system. He's not ready yet. I think they'll go out and get innings guys, maybe find somebody to fill that. But I think if you're the Astros, you look and say, hey, look, we know that in a playoff series, you go Verlander, Cole, Miley, and if we've got to go to a fourth starter, we can fake it with like a bullpen-type game with whether it's Framber Valdez or, you know, maybe if Peacock's back and healthy, maybe it's McHugh. I don't think they're that worried.
Joe, thank you as always, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That is Joe Sheehan on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Reminder, we are going until 2 o'clock today because we are doing the Lawrence Holmes show today. And Joe Madden is going to bookend Joe Day with us coming up just after noon.
We have an anniversary to celebrate today. It is an important one. It's one that I believe you were on the air during. Shortly after, of course, that the game would have been right here. Fun day. Incredible day. And it's a day worth doing the Let's Remember Some Guys dance around, because it's a hell of a thing to have seen happen here in this town just 10 years ago. We'll get there. Bernstein McKnight, 670, the score.
That ball hit deep into left center field. Wise.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced. Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back. Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy! A great catch by Dwayne Wise!
It's unbelievable as Wise goes back into the wall knowing he has no room to spare. He goes up over the wall and then juggles it before corralling it. What a play by Wise!
Under the circumstances, one of the greatest catches I have ever seen in 50 years in this game.
The hottest hitter on this team stands in between Mark Burley and perfection.
Alexei! Yes! 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 History!
I love that call. I love that call. I really do. I love that call.
What a game, what a day, what an improbability that all was. 5-0, the White Sox beat the Tampa Bay Rays. I can't believe that was 10 years ago.
10 years ago today.
That was July 23rd, 2009, at what was then U.S. Cellular Field. And a note in here from longtime listener and Sox fan Rudy, who says, please don't read that lineup again that you read during transition
this morning. Oh, it's gross.
I'm not one to tell you how to program your show. I loved the Mark Burley perfect game. We should celebrate it, but I threw up this morning when you read it earlier.
Well, you're purged, so you won't have to do it again because we're reading the lineup again.
Yeah, this was a team. This was one of the best offensive teams in baseball. Going up against a contact-oriented, you know, non-strikeout bat-missing pitcher at a hitter's park with a brutal defensive lineup behind him.
Not good.
So the Rays trotted out Upton, Bufford, Longoria, Pena, Zobrist, Burl, Kapler, Hernandez,
Mario Machado,
and Bartlett behind Scott Kazmir.
Was the second highest on team on base percentage, .343 in baseball at that moment, walking into that game.
They had a team OPS over 800. I think like 820 something.
I think you're right. Yeah.
As a team. Yeah. As a team in that park against that pitcher, against that defense. And the White Sox lineup was Scott Posednik, who began in center field, later transferred to left to make way for Dwayne Wise when the left fielder in Carlos Quentin actually came out of the game. But think about it. Alexi Ramirez, Jermaine Dye in right, Paul Konerko was the DH, Quentin in left, Beckham at third, Jason Nix at second, Ramon Castro was the catcher, and Josh Fields was at first.
That's a Sunday lineup. I mean, it wasn't a Sunday.
Was it a getaway day?
I'd have to look that up.
It might have been a Thursday day game.
Yeah, it was a 1 o'clock. Yeah.
It might have been day game after a night game Sunday lineup reasoning getaway day.
It was. I can tell you this. It was the 18th perfect game in Major League history, the 263rd no-hitter. For the White Sox, it was the second perfect game in their franchise history, the 17th no-no. Do you know the name of the guy who threw the very first perfect game in White Sox history?
What year was it?
1922.
Probably not.
Charlie Robertson.
It's a lovely name.
Lovely name. I did a little digging on this. Tell me this isn't like good old baseball interesting. It was the first perfect road game in Major League history. He did it, I forget, is it Navin or Navin Field in Detroit back in the day? I think it's Navin.
Navin Johnson is the only Navin Navin I know. Johnson. Is it N-A-V-I-N?
Yeah, N-A-V-I-N.
Okay, Navin Johnson.
He did it in Detroit.
I'm a somebody now. Charlie the new phone books are here.
Charlie Robertson was the only man, the last man left from the 1919 White Sox team where he played one game. He threw his perfect game in his fourth career start. And check this line out from his Wikipedia page. Charlie Robertson's main pitch throughout his career was a slow curveball, which he often threw on the first pitch to a batter of either hand, followed by a fastball up in the zone. How is that
sequencing?
Like, good God, man!
From back then, that's pretty good to have that, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's quite a day. Obviously, you contend that this is the most unlikely perfect game.
Well, I would have to go and actually comp it with all the others.
Of course, but anecdote, we don't have time to do that, A. And anecdotally speaking,
I'm not pulling a hawk to say it's the most, but this, okay, you're offering
the
me.
Liveliest bat I've ever seen in right. Dion Vicieto.
Right.
Phillip Umber, as an unlikely perfect game, I know he'd pitched well enough, and the man was a first-round draft pick.
But wasn't that a terrible lineup he was facing?
It was the Seattle Mariners, if I recall,
yeah,
in 2012. And I can't imagine that the Seattle Mariners in 2012 were any good at all. But neither was Phillip Umber, really.
You know, it would be nice to know the perspective of the manager of the Rays, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I wouldn't mind talking to him.
It'll be
just
nice.
A little bit about that day.
Let's see. Who was managing the Rays back then?
Let's see. 09.
Who was in that dugout?
Zobrist. Let's see. Oh, well, they had just made that big run into the World Series against the Phillies.
Yeah.
It's a guy who... Oh, you know what? It's Joe Maddon.
It is. And because we get to host the Lawrence Holmes show today, we are going to talk to him in just about 30 minutes.
Do you want to know that Mariners lineup?
Yes.
Do we?
Eh. Sean Figgins, Dustin Ackley, Ichiro, Justin Smoke, Kyle Seager, Jesus Montero, Michael Saunders, Miguel Olivo, and Munenori Kawasaki.
That's some bad. There's six hitters in there that shouldn't have been in the major leagues then.
Yeah, that's no good. I don't know how improbable that is for Phillip Umber or anybody else. The most probable no-hitter, I think, was Carlos Zambrano's in Milwaukee.
Oh, no one had slept and no one knew where the hell they were.
Dude, that's one where, like, if you can't get a no-hitter today, you're never getting a no-hitter in your life.
That was the Burley no-hitter, too, against the Rays was the first of four no-hitters that Rays team gave up in 3 years. It was Dallas Braden who did it to him, like, a year later. Then it was Edwin Jackson who got the Rays in 2010 in June. And then Felix Hernandez got the Rays in 2012. They tied the Dodgers for the only major league franchise to allow three perfect games and then gave up the fourth to Felix Hernandez in August of 2012. It's an unbelievable
weird
baseball nonsense that probably meant nothing about how good that Rays team was, but four perfect games in less than 3 years.
Yeah, I don't know if that's meaningful or not.
I have no idea.
It doesn't sound like it is.
Listen, if you were to take though the long view of baseball, right, like the Joe Sheehan view of baseball, a perfect game isn't necessarily all that meaningful. It's just a grouping of 27 outs. But you know, we put it together, and that's, you know, it's the no walks, the no hits. It's the no walks is more important to me than the no hits in a game like that.
And you saw that Paul Sullivan started handicapping the Hall of Fame possibilities for both the Cubs and the Sox of the next guys up of who as actual full-fledged members of the team or teams.
Okay. They,
and Burley's on the list, but...
Sure.
Nah. They got Paul Konerko, no.
No.
Alfonso Soriano, no.
Nope.
Mark Burley, no. Aramis Ramirez, no. Jake Peavy, no.
No.
A.J. Pierzynski, no. And John Lackey, no. As far as upcoming eligibility. Now, you start talking about somebody like John Lester. Yeah.
You know, I was there. I was at what was then U.S. Cellular Field, now Guaranteed Rate Field, on a day. It was after the perfect game, obviously, because I think score search had happened just prior to this perfect game, and then I spent a month waiting for my start date. So as this perfect game happened, I was, you know, just kind of waiting to start work here. And a lot of my first assignments were covering Sox games and going down to the ballpark for pregaming, that kind of stuff. And I remember that Ozzie had a particular pregame conference, and I think it might have been in 2010, like early on in 2010 as Burley was kind of getting his season going. And he went off, as Ozzie often did, on just like this tangent, right? Whether it was Derek Jeter or something else, he would always have a tangent that he just kind of spout on. And he must have spent 15 to 20 minutes talking about how Mark Burley will be a Hall of Famer.
Really?
Because, check this, see how prescient this is from Ozzy, because the thresholds for starting pitchers are all dropping. This was in 2010. This is a decade ago.
Yeah, he was right.
And Ozzy then was talking
about
Burley being a Hall of Famer.
Maybe nothing wrong with his logic.
The logic is there. Like, there aren't, you know, he was making the point, there aren't that many left-handers in there. There aren't many 300-game, there won't be another 300-game winner in there. I think that's what Ozzy's point was at the time. And then the strikeout numbers were going to matter, you know, kind of less and less as a bulk of your career became shorter and shorter starts. And it just, we were going to change the aiming points for what needed to be a Hall of Fame starting pitcher. And Ozzie was, I remember guys walking out of the dugout then going, what was that all about? Like, he's just stumping for his guy, Mark Burley, to get into the Hall of Fame. And I'll be, I mean, he's right. You know, the logic was right from Ozzie then. That was 10 years ago.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves will open the season on Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com.
Crazy. 10 years ago. That doesn't even seem to make sense.
That flew, didn't it?
Really, really, really did.
That really flew. Well, Joe Madden is going to join us as we do our little non-hostile takeover of the Lawrence Holmes Show. We're doing it today, and we're going to do it again on Thursday. Tack on the extra 2 hours of your Bernstein and McKnight presence. Takes two white guys to replace Lawrence Holmes.
It does. That's the math on
that. That's the going exchange rate, apparently, as it were.
Speaking of the White Sox, I know that as we get to the trade deadline, a lot of focus has been on the Cubs here, but there have been a couple of writings and recently about where the Sox are at and what the mindset might be for them going into the deadline. Bruce Levine had a little bit of a write-up on what Rick Hahn had been talking about. I've got a couple of guys that I think the White Sox could look to move, and I need you to stop checking in on one particular White Sox trade that is nothing but a pipe trade. We'll head there next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Bernstein and McKnight, we are broadcasting from the Hyundai studios that are brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers and the new 8-passenger Hyundai Palisade.
Getting closer and closer to the trade deadline, and while we've talked a lot about the Cubs and exactly what they may need to do to fix up the bullpen that's gotten a little leakier than you might think of late, Joe Madden's going to come up at noon. We've got the Lawrence Holmes Show this afternoon, so we'll talk to Joe in just a couple of minutes. I wanted to look at the White Sox real quickly here because of something that Bruce Levine wrote up on 670thescore.com just a little while ago. Rick Hahn talking to some reporters and kind of setting a sense of things. And I found it interesting the way Bruce wrote it up. This hour, by the way, brought to you by Sharp Vision Modern LASIK here on The Score. The White Sox are taking calls, the report starts, on their available players and considering any offer that improves their long-term trajectory ahead of the deadline, but lack a notable trait they've had the last couple of years, and that is a sense of urgency. I'm weirdly placated by that. I'm weirdly understanding of a lack of urgency to move some of the expiring or near expiring deals that the White Sox have on their roster. You know, whether that's Alex Colome, whether that's Lurie Garcia, whether that's, you know, I mean, name your White Sox that's been prominently featured in trade rumors here the last couple of weeks or so. Mm-hmm. And it's because of something that I've been mentioning a couple of times here on the show as it pertains to the 2020 White Sox. I will be fascinated to watch that team, next year's White Sox team, work as many first-year and or recovering starters into the rotation as they will have to do. I mean, look at it this way. Kopech will be back at some point, and if not, right away. Mm-hmm. That will be his first full major league season, and he'll be coming off an injury all at the same time. Dylan Cease will have had you know, however many innings he's got this year meshed into what will be his first full season.
Right.
Dane Dunning comes off injury and features in the rotation. How? And I think that's a fair question and one that can't be answered yet. Same question for Carlos Rodon. As assuming he comes back at some point next season, which would be the timeline that exists now, at some point he comes back and probably won't offer you a whole lot of innings, but he is a guy that you'd like to obviously start if he is healthy, because if nothing else, you've got to see how good he is so that other teams can figure out how good he is if that's something you're looking to trade. All of those things are really difficult to balance and make sure that you've got...
Yeah, that's a heavy lift.
It really is.
That's a lot of resources.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, you think about it. I've been thinking about their rotation next year as like a carton of eggs, right? I mean, you can't drop any one of them. You have to make sure you're focused
on
each and every... Well, you didn't drop them, though. You know what I mean? Like, Tommy John is, oh, God, I walked out of the grocery store and I didn't check the eggs in the first place. It's nobody's fault. It happens.
Okay, but are you a swap good eggs for bad guy, or do you have to grab an entire different dozen?
Oh, no, I'll swap those eggs, baby. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I think if shoppers...
I'm not going to dig for a carton of good eggs.
No, if you're working as a team, if people are working together,
yeah.
There's one that's already sort of open as your pool of rescue eggs.
Community eggs.
Right,
sure.
Community eggs. Like, grab the ones you need from this one that clearly has been used as replacement level eggs over the broken ones. You put the broke ones if you can't over here.
Often I will take that community egg, you know, carton and put it off to the side just a little bit, or like note.
Make it obvious.
Maybe
to
put it on the different pile, or maybe like the shelf above or something like that, just so people know.
You're
like
a shopper,
these
team
are
shopper.
The broken egg. But I am very willing to rob other egg cartons for their good eggs. I'm not going to search for the full carton. I don't have the time.
But as a completionist, though, I would think maybe you wanted to start from scratch to get one that's pristine. But you're right.
Damn you, Dan. I hadn't thought of it that way, and now that might be in my head.
And now the White Sox can't afford to make mistakes in pushing or accelerating. You know, and here's what's amazing, too. All of our best practices, all of our understood conventional wisdom about pitch counts, about minor league start frequencies, might all be wrong.
I'm of the opinion that innings limits, while they might be good, actually setting them is kind of anybody's best guess.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's just, we're hoping, what's Dylan Cease's innings limit this year? 140 or whatever. Well, why 140?
I don't know.
Because that sounds good to us. I don't know. You check in with him and you monitor the... I'm not saying it's made on a complete blind guess. You check in with Dylan and see how he's feeling, and you try and get him to tell the truth. But that's what it is. It's a best guess. So it's for those reasons that two things pop into my mind. I would like them to shop and aggressively shop Alex Colome. I understand that that's not where they're at. And if the holding on to innings is the most important thing for the White Sox in 2020, making sure that you've got, wherever those innings come from, innings to supplement what's going to be a rotation that's going to need help. I mean, even if you've got, I don't know, do I have to read you the starters right now outside of Lucas Giolito?
Does it matter?
I mean, not really. Covey and Lopez and Nova, if you want to give all those guys more burn next season, I guess that's fine, and those are innings. But I would rather do it with you know, a bullpen that can grow and get better. I don't really want to move Aaron Bummer. I don't feel like moving Jace Fry. I feel like those are guys that's probably worth taking around the league before one more time before you look at trading some of the short-term guys for maybe some more longer-term or prospect-type dudes. I like the promise there. So if Colome is there, I'd like to go. I like the idea of pushing in for a veteran arm that can balance out this rotation for the next two seasons.
This isn't like the Cubs saying when we're ready.
Nope.
Like the Lester signing.
Lester happened before they were ready.
Yeah.
They signed Lester before they were ready. It's not they
also were ready earlier than they thought they were going to be.
That's true, but they signed Lester with the preparations of being an 80 something win team that season.
So who's that guy now? Who's that available veteran? Is that making a Bumgarner or Garrett Cole?
No, I want long term. I want long term. I want veteran. I want somebody that can teach lessons. If James McCann has taught us anything, it's that some of this may matter. Some of this teaching, some of this rub-off stuff may actually matter. I want, kind of badly, for them to get creative and push a couple of prospects in for a guy like Zach Greinke. And I don't care that he's genuinely expensive, because he is. And I don't necessarily care that others, especially out West and Diamondbacks fans among them, might look at Greinke and go, oh, he hasn't been worth the money. Yeah, he has. Pitching is expensive, and this is what it takes. You have nothing. Nothing on your payroll the next couple of years. You have every reason to go out and get a guy that might pitch really well for you. And okay, say everything falls apart for you and you can't get the injured pitchers back and constitute a real rotation that can make a push for playoffs. You know what you can do with Zach Greinke then, if he's pitching well? Trade him again. Recoup some of the assets that you had to move. And I bet you, now, all this is kind of contingent on the Diamondbacks, you know, falling off the pace and not keeping up with the Giants in a wild card spot, so that may be on them. But I bet you that if you're willing to take the money, and more of it than anybody else is, on Greinke, that the Diamondbacks would be fairly willing to not ask for some of the top – you wouldn't have to get to Luis Robert. You wouldn't have to get to Nick Madrigal in order to make a trade like this, nor would I want to do it if I'm the White Sox. That's why his price tag is interesting to me. That's why the move is interesting.
It's some ballsy stuff.
It would be ballsy. But be ballsy. Yeah, something.
Why
like
shouldn't
this.
You be at this point, right?
You know, the cost – really the long-term cost could be fairly low, assuming Greinke can pitches well the remainder of his contract, and he's shown signs of absolutely being able to do that. You need a little wherewithal, and you need some self-scouting. You need to have made an assertion which of your prospects are really going to be here for you and which of them are just a little bit more hype than actual ball player at this point. Move those dudes. You know what I'm saying? Be the 90s Braves and monopolize on some of the hype that this system has. Trade the guys you don't see being long-term guys. Keep the guys you can.
We've got Joe Maddon coming up. I say we because we are doing the Lawrence Holmes show, so we'll get to reconnect with Joe. A lot of things to discuss today, and I have to admit, I was dubious about his pizza condiment combination, his toppings, and they work.
Nailed it.
I don't have to tell him that. He absolutely nailed it. But a lot of baseball after another Cubs bullpen implosion last night. We are going to talk to him. Do not go anywhere. You have the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.